Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, August. Sorry, it's Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. At least I think it's Tuesday. Yes, I'm checking. It's Tuesday. Sorry, I wasn't here yesterday. We were on the rescue kitten mission for the weekend. Yes, there is a happy little formerly homeless kitten who has now found a new home. So mission was a success. That's why I was not on air yesterday morning. We were at the vet with the kitten. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show, Scientific American Says GMO Concern Is All in Your Head. And yes, it is. If you remember, we read this unbelievable story out of Scientific American, which was a publication that I've been reading for probably 20 or 25 years now. And, you know, you still take science with a grain of salt. But on the other hand, it was a publication that first taught me about nanotechnology back in the late 80s, early 90s. So I kind of held Scientific American close to my heart. But I'm going to tell you what, after we read this story on Friday, I got to say they have a screw loose. This guy's story basically went through the facts that the only reason why the public does not like GMOs and why we will not believe that they are safe is because it is all about the anti-GMO propaganda that has convinced us as such. And now that we totally understand how we have revolving doors between every regulatory agency and these GMO companies, yes, it is just easy to believe that GMOs are safe and all for our benefit, not for the profit, not for taking over and patenting all of biological life. No, has nothing to do with that. Just shut up and eat it is pretty much what they're saying. It was probably one of the biggest propaganda pieces I've seen to date for pro-GMO. But it can only get better than that. I found a story over the weekend that apparently nobody either got or cared much about, but I think I'm going to share it with you today. It's kind of a long story, but the horrifying nature of what is happening right now has just gone, I mean, so off the rails. You're not even going to believe this. So we can't sell GMOs to the public because, hey, people are on to us. All right, well, we got a better way to do it. This comes out of MIT Technology Review, and it is titled The Next Great GMO Debate. Of course, that caught my attention. It says, deep inside its labs, Monsanto is learning how to modify crops by what? Spraying them with RNA rather than tinkering with their genes. Now, for probably the last 6 months or more, we've been talking about RNAi, RNA interference. We actually looked at a forward-looking statement for 2014, probably must have been January or so, for Monsanto of some of the new technologies that were in their pipeline that they were working on. And we had already been on to them that they were working on RNAi. We had seen RNAi previously from some of the biotech companies that were working with the technology in the newfangled vaccines. Yes, being able to flip switches on and off in your DNA to be able to either fight disease, prevent disease, turn off the production of certain proteins. I mean, sounds like such a great idea. Well, wait until you hear this. The Colorado potato beetle is a voracious eater, and insects can chew through 10 square centimeters of a leaf a day, and left unchecked, it will strip a plant bare. But the beetles I were looking at were doomed. Doomed, I say. The plant that they were feeding on, which was a bright green and carefully netted in Monsanto's labs outside of St. Louis, has been doused with a spray of RNA. The experiment took advantage of a mechanism called RNA interference. It is a way to temporarily turn off the activity of any gene. And in this case, the gene being shut down was one vital to the insect's survival. quote, "I am pretty sure that 99% of them will soon be dead," says Jody Beatty, a Monsanto scientist who showed me her experiments. Yes. Wow, this is so great. We're going to eat something and it'll kill 99% of the creatures that eat it. That just sounds like something I want to be eating. The discovery of RNA interference earned two academics a Nobel Prize in 2006 and set off a scramble to create drugs that block disease-causing genes. Using the same technology, Monsanto now thinks that it has hit on an alternative to conventionally genetic modified organisms, or GMOs. This can already kill bugs by getting them to eat leaves coated with specially designed RNA. And if the company succeeds in developing sprays that penetrate the plant cells, as it is attempting to, it could block certain plant genes too. Imagine a spray that causes tomatoes to taste better or helps plants survive a drought. And Monsanto isn't the only one working on genetic sprays. Other large agricultural biotech companies, including Bayer and Syngenta, oh, the gang is all here, are also investigating the technology. The appeal is that it offers control over genes, ding, ding, without modifying a plant's genome, that is, without creating a GMO. So, hey, you know what? If people aren't going to accept GMO foods, let's find a way to get around it and still genetically manipulate things without having to label it as maybe GMO. I don't know. Let's read a little bit more. This means that sprays might sidestep, here we go, much of the controversy around agricultural biotechnology, or so the companies hope. What is certain is that a way to accomplish the goal of genetic engineering without having to develop a GMO could bring commercial rewards. Yes, we're going to make bazillions of dollars, because there are so many countries now that will not allow GMO seeds or GMO crops. But hey, if we had just some sort of fancy pants spray that we could spray on non-genetically modified foods, hey. So sprays might be quickly tailored to do battle with an insect infestation or a new type of virus. Not only could this be faster than creating new GM crops, but the gene silencing effects of RNA interference only lasts a few days or weeks if you wanted to. And that means you might spray on traits. Yes, spray on traits, such as drought resistance in times of water shortage, without affecting the plant's performance in times of normal rainfall. Beatty showed me a large glass jar in which dried, purified RNA glistened like crumbled packing peanuts. And a few years ago, this much RNA might have cost as much as $1 million. One reason few would have thought to spray it from tractors rumbling through rows of corn. But now the cost of making RNA has plummeted. And Monsanto estimates that it now only costs $50 a gram. At a tenth of that amount, the company says, it is potent enough to kill 100% of all beetles on an entire acre of plants. Wow. You know, when you really think about what they are saying here and how dangerous this insanity is, you got to think that these scientists have to have a mega screw loose. Or, hey, maybe, just maybe, it could be used for reducing the population. Let's just keep reading, because it took me the whole morning. I've been up actually since 5:30 this morning digging into this, and I was horrified by the end of this. Okay, so back to the story. At Monsanto, I met Robert Fraley, and this isn't me. This is the author from the MIT Technology Review. I met Rob Fraley, the company's chief executive officer, who oversees a research staff of 5,000. And 3 years ago, Fraley had designated the RNA sprays as one of Monsanto's new areas for product development. He thinks that within a few years, they will, quote, open up a new way to use biotechnology that does not have the same stigma, the same intensive regulatory studies, and the same cost as we would normally associate with GMOs. Wow, that gets me so damn excited because we have this whole new way of using biotechnology and we can get around the intensive regulatory studies that I still don't see being done since they rubber stamp GMOs. A tomato is a tomato, a potato is a potato, and a carrot is a carrot, don't forget. He told us that he thinks that the tools are incredible and breathtaking, and that of all the platforms we are working on, this is the one that reminds me the most of the early crazy days of biotechnology. It was Fraley who made Monsanto's first genetically modified plants in the 1980s, petunias that were resistant to plant poison. And today, Monsanto has revenues of about $9 billion a year from GM seeds for crops that produce the insect toxin BT or resist the weed killer Roundup. GM corn, soy, and cotton now spreads across 180 million hectares, and it has generated a public controversy just as vast. And to its strongest critics, I thought it was funny, the company is simply known as Monsanto. And they are. But with the RNA spray technology, which Monsanto calls BioDirect, what a cute little name that is, the company may have found something that will bedevil their opponents. The sprays are made from a ubiquitous molecule that quickly degrades in soil. Phew! So no one will know we sprayed it on the plants. We don't have to tell anybody. They can be genetically precise enough to kill a potato bug, but they can spare their ladybug cousins. And so far, consuming RNA molecules appears no more toxic to people than drinking a glass of orange juice. Oh my God! Yes, and they tell us later that they're already doing it on they're doing it on citrus trees in an experiment as well. But the orange juice, I had a friend tell me a long time ago, orange juice really isn't orange juice anyway. It's just a bunch of oranges that then have all kinds of weird flavorings and stuff in it to make it taste like orange juice. So I don't know about you, but unless it's fresh squeezed and unless it has no pesticides on it, I don't know if I'd be taking drinking RNA as safe as orange juice as a compliment. Says, as Monsanto put in a letter to U.S. regulators, quote, humans have been eating RNA for as long as we've been eating, unquote. Yes, and I'm sure the regulators just took that to mean that it is safe as safe can be. Let's rubber stamp it all. Public opposition, regulations, and the slow pace of plant breeding means that on an average, bringing a new GM crop to market costs more than $100 million and takes around 13 years. But imagine you wanted to fight a plant virus, says James Carrington, head of the Missouri nonprofit called Danforth Plant Science Center and an advisor to Monsanto. If you can gain control with a spray, you can envision a product that can change very rapidly, that you can test faster, experiment with faster, and bring to market faster, he says. You could respond to issues as they arise. This, to me, is beyond horrifying. Yes, let's experiment with it faster and spray it faster and try to kill things faster because it's a spray. This is not everyone is convinced, though, that applying RNA will be commercially feasible or any less controversial than genetic modification. This, you know what? Everybody who understands GMO better get on the bandwagon and understand what RNAi means. Look it up. Read about it. This is not good at all. The public is not accepting of GMOs, he says, and this could be more alarming, you think? People are going to say you are taking the RNA and spraying this out in the open. Yes, says Kasim El-Khadib, a plant physiologist at the University of California, Davis. The acceptance of biotech has to be there before you can deliver another approach. So let's make sure that we give our children Monsanto coloring books and tell them how wonderful it is that GMOs are saving the planet. And they are doing that. I think I linked to the Monsanto coloring book in the notes of the show on Friday. It says, this isn't a technology for tomorrow, says Kalib. This is a technology for the day after tomorrow. Now, if anyone remembers that movie, The Day After Tomorrow, I think that's what it was called. Yeah, that was a complete apocalyptic movie. Anyway, back to the story. When I met Fraley, he didn't deny that they are obstacles. In fact, that's what reminds him so much of biotech's early days. He says no one yet understands exactly how to get RNA inside of a plant's cells using a field sprayer, at least not with the sort of inexpensive, works every time efficiencies that farmers would be looking for. And many insects are also not easily affected. Monsanto has been spending millions to crack these problems, collaborating with biotech companies specializing in drug delivery. And we are still a few breakthroughs away, he says. The cells of plants and animals carry their instructions in the form of DNA. And to make a protein, the sequence of genetic letters in each gene gets copied into matching strands of RNA, which then float out of the nucleus to guide the protein-making machinery of the cell. RNA interference, or more commonly known as gene silencing, is a way to destroy specific RNA messages so that a particular protein is not made. Now, that doesn't sound like it could potentially cause major issues with biological life now, does it? The mechanism is a natural one. It appears to have evolved as a defense system against viruses. It is triggered when a cell encounters a double-stranded RNA or two strands that are zipped together, the kind that viruses make as they try to copy their genetic material. So to defend itself, the cell chops the double-stranded RNA molecule into little bits and then uses pieces to seek out and destroy matching RNA messages. So yes, biological life has found a way, when you have double-stranded RNA, to protect itself against that, because typically it's viruses that use that technology. But now, what scientists have learned was that if they designed a double-stranded RNA corresponding to an animal or plant cell's own genes, they could get the cells to silence those genes, not only those of a virus. So they can not only turn off the virus genes, but they can go in and start flipping switches within their own bodies that are exposed to this. I mean, this is just beyond insidious. Some GM plants already use RNA interference to disable unwanted enzymes or to kill viruses or pests. The Flavor Saver tomato, which was the first genetically modified crop to be approved in the United States back in 1994, harnessed the mechanism to block an enzyme that makes tomatoes soft so they could ripen longer on the vine. You know, 1994, I'd like to know how many of us have consumed Flavor Saver tomatoes and did not know that they were genetically modified, because I did not until I read the story. Like Monsanto's Roundup Ready cotton and corn, the Flavor Saver was a GMO. Its seeds have an extra gene that manufactures a specific RNA molecule. And since then, companies have engineered a few other plants to take advantage of RNA interference. This year, a Granny Smith apple genetically modified to silence a gene that turns apple slices brown won clearance from regulators. And we talked about that. And before that, the Hawaiian papaya industry was saved by plants engineered to produce RNA that defends against ring spot virus. And now Monsanto is awaiting approval to sell corn plants that use RNA interference to kill the Western corn rootworm. That plant is the first GMO to incorporate an insecticidal RNA into its genetic makeup. Yeah, I want to eat that corn. I haven't eaten corn in probably 4 years now since I learned about GMO. This is just unbelievable. I mean, this really is the Isle of Dr. Moreau. So, what if you could just spray RNA on plants instead of tinkering with a plant's genome? A chemist named Doug Sammons was the first person inside Monsanto to have this dubious idea. He studies weeds that have become resistant to glyphosate, the herbicide that Monsanto markets as Roundup. These weeds have become a huge problem, which we found out about that when we read the story on Friday about the concerns about GMOs and why people won't jump on the bandwagon. And they made it sound like our biggest concern was, yes, now we have these Roundup resistant weeds. Well, no, that's not my biggest concern, but whatever. Well, this chemist, Doug Sammons, was the first person inside Monsanto to come up with the wonderful idea to spray RNA on weeds resistant to glyphosate. These weeds would have become a huge problem for farmers and for Monsanto. Sammons determined that some resistant weeds have as many as 160 extra copies of a gene called EPSPS. And that's something I started digging into this morning, and it was pretty complex, so maybe I can get to that tomorrow. But yes, these plants that have been sprayed with glyphosate and have become resistant now have all these extra copies inside of them of a gene called EPSPS. That's the very enzyme glyphosate interferes with blocking plant growth, and the superweeds have found a trick to overwhelm the insecticide. Sammons thought the weeds' extra genes could be knocked back into line with RNA interference. The problem was that since weeds are wild, Monsanto didn't have any way to control their genetic makeup as it would with a corn plant. So he came to us and said, hey, why don't we just spray this on a plant? And we were like, really? Says Gregory Hick, a research manager at Monsanto. We'd only thought of GMOs up until that time. Well, it seemed unlikely that it would work, but it did, according to Monsanto. In lab tests and at a roadside plot somewhere in Illinois that's been overrun by weeds, a mixture of Roundup and double-stranded RNA coded to match the EPSPS gene made resistant weeds wilt. According to Monsanto's patent, the technique also involves spraying a silicone surfactant that let the RNA molecules slip into an air exchange hole in the plant's surface. And somehow, soaking the leaves with RNA caused the silencing effect to spread throughout the entire plant, affecting it long enough to let the herbicide take hold and kill it. Bravo, Monsanto! You just found another way to wipe out different forms of biological life. This technology could give Monsanto a new, exclusive formulation of Roundup, which lost its original patent several years ago, and help deal with the troublesome weeds which have spread across the U.S. farmland. Quote, it is definitely a prize if you can re-enable glyphosate, says Heck, but the company's scientists saw that it could do much more. They could theoretically, in the mad scientist sort of way, reach in and temporarily block any gene in any crop or person. Quote, it could be a weed or it could be a corn plant, says Lyle Crossland, a senior program manager at Monsanto. You could just dial in the sequence of information. You could just turn off the gene that makes fruits brown, or you could do something with their drought tolerance, their photosynthesis. We just have a lot of probing going on. Can you hear this guy like making himself wet over the excitement of this newfangled technology taking control of biology? Some plant experts aren't convinced that it's practical yet. Steve Prowles, director of the Australian Herbicide Resistance Initiative and a professor at the University of Western Australia, told me that he had a, quote, bit of a go at repeating Monsanto's wheat experiment, but he had not been able to make it work. Getting double-stranded RNA sprayed onto plants and getting it into plants and killing a plant is not easy. And in fact, it is very, very difficult, he says. There is a formulation technology, the shelf life, and it could bounce around in the back of a pickup for a week at 110 degrees. Richard Jorgensen, a plant biologist who was the first to observe RNA interference, thinks modifying traits with a spray, quite, might literally be patchy compared with a true GMO. Say you want to turn a flower a specific color. Would you spray it every week and hope it gets into every cell in the plant bud? Well, I think there are a lot of limitations compared to GMO, he says. To Prowles, however, the idea of a spray-on trait has strong appeal. It is a way of elegantly targeting particular genes and turning those genes off. And there are undesirable trait genes in everything, he says, including you and me. After the weed discovery, which occurred in 2010, Monsanto began spending heavily to build a position in RNA technology. It took over a company called, we know this company, Biologics. Remember them? They were the company that was working on trying to save the bees from colony collapse disorder, and Monsanto purchased them. Monsanto began spending heavily, blah, blah, blah. It took over a company called Biologics, which had found a way to introduce RNA into sugar water that bees fed on in order to kill a parasitic mite that infests hives. And I did not know that they had been working on RNA technology with the bees. That company had also come up with a much cheaper way to make RNA. So now we know why Monsanto bought Biologics. It wasn't just to genetically modify bees or to hide the fact that their glyphosate was probably killing the bees through cutting off their ability to metabolize proper nutrition and minerals, chelating out minerals, which Dr. Huber had talked about extensively in some of the interviews we heard. No. It also had to do with the fact that Biologics had come up with a cheap way to make RNA. Monsanto also began trying to crack the problems of trying to get RNA into plants more efficiently. It paid $30 million for access to the RNA interference know-how and patents held by a biotech company called Elniam. And they did a similar deal with Techmira, which we've run into before, an RNA delivery specialist based in Burnaby, British Columbia. Now, if we remember, Techmira was the company that we exposed that was working on their RNI Ebola solution that had gotten venture funding from DARPA. Now, it was interesting when I looked up Techmira this morning. Guess what? They have abandoned their Ebola drug because it didn't seem to work well. Now, we don't know what happened. They have not yet published their results from their studies that they did in Africa on the poor dying Ebola patients, but they have now moved on to other things. But this Analam, let me see if I still have them up here. I started digging into some of these companies. Yes, Analam. Analam, and collaborators at MIT publish research on a discovery of lipidoids. And we're going to talk about lipidoids because they mention it in this story as well. And when I first read about lipidoids, it was in regards to cancer treatment using nanoparticles and RNAi. So how interesting that Monsanto is buying technology from companies that are doing nanotechnology and RNA interference studies with cancer patients. All right, let's continue with our original story. Monsanto is also a financial backer in a 15-person company called Pre-Series, which is a kind of a skunk works it established with off-campus MIT professors where robotic mixers are, yes, MIT, the pit of demons, where robotic mixers are busy stirring RNA together with coatings of what? Oh, specialized nanoparticles. Guys, this is just so beyond evil. Nobody gets what they are doing. Let's look at the board of managers of Pre-Series. P-R-E-C-E-R-E-S. Pre-Series LLC. Board of managers, Daniel Anderson of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He developed advanced drug delivery systems which provide new methods for drug delivery, non-viral gene therapy, siRNA delivery, and vaccines. Mr. Robert Langer, also of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, he holds 1,026 patents worldwide, 250 of which have been licensed or sublicensed to pharmaceutical, chemical, biotechnology, and medical device companies. Number three, Stephen Paget of Monsanto. Yes, Vice President of R&D Investment Strategy and Growth Ventures Lead Global Strategy Group. He is responsible for the R&D investment strategies, including Monsanto's new corporate venture capital program with offices in Cambridge, San Francisco, and St. Louis. Also on this board of managers of Pre-Series, Robert McCarroll of Monsanto. He is the chemistry technology lead, responsible for Monsanto's traditional small molecule chemistry and what? Oh, BioDirect, which is the spray-on RNA technology teams striving to discover and improve agronomic, so it must be for the economics of agriculture, agronomic tools to protect crops from weeds, pests, and diseases. Another one on the board of directors is John E. McLean, also of Monsanto, BioDirect Business Lead Global Strategy Group, responsible for strategy and commercial development of Monsanto's BioDirect platform and associated venture capital equity investments. And last but not least, the CEO of Pre-Series, Roger Wigand. Prior to joining Pre-Series, Dr. Wigand was the Associate Director of Infectious Disease Initiatives at the Broad Institute, responsible for coordinating what? Oh, malaria drug discovery and genetics projects. I am sure that he probably knows good old Billy Gates as well. Tell me if that is not a pot of demons in that Pre-Series group. Let me get back to the story now. I couldn't help it. I had to read to you who was involved. So Monsanto is also the financial backer of a 15-person company called Pre-Series, which is a kind of skunk works it established just off campus of MIT, where robotic mixers are busily stirring RNA together with coatings of specialized nanoparticles. The startup was created by drug delivery specialists, including MIT professors Daniel Anderson and Robert Langer, who have spent a decade learning how to get RNA drugs into human cells, a problem so difficult that it almost derailed the idea of such medicine. Anderson told me that the crop project faces substantial difficulties as well. Quote, it is easier to envision if you are injecting a person in their veins, but if you are spraying it out of a plane, it would be a whole different set of challenges, he said. We do not have to worry about wind currents with current drugs. Yes, now think about this technology, being able to flip switches on and off and spraying it out of a plane. When we think about past human experimentation that has been done on populations, especially without their knowledge, where they have sprayed stuff over a city just to see what would happen. This is even more horrifying to me. The basic task at pre-series is how to get a large electrically charged molecule like RNA to move through a plant's waxy cuticle and into its cells. To do this, researchers are working to encapsulate the RNA in synthetic nanoparticles called lipidoids, L-I-P-I-D-O-I-D-S, which are greasy blobs with specialized chemical tails. The idea is to slip them into a plant where the coating will dissolve, releasing the RNA, and formulations get shipped out to St. Louis for testing in greenhouses. And if you start digging into lipidoids and nanoparticles, you will find out that this is also how they are experimenting with new cancer treatments as well. Roger Weingard, the company's CEO, and that is pre-series, says that the company is also trying to kill insects that aren't as easily affected by RNA, such as the potato beetle. There are insects that just laugh at a naked double-stranded RNA, says, and those include caterpillars now infesting Brazil's soybean crops. He says that some of the formulations get tested for endurance and caterpillar spit that Monsanto sends to Cambridge. If they are able to sort out delivery problems, Weingard thinks, RNA sprays will be a big frickin' deal, quote unquote, and a breakthrough at the same level GMO plants were way back when. Yet so far, only a few scientific publications even mention the idea of RNA sprays, and that is why I'm bringing this to your attention, because this was the actual first story that I had seen about spraying this shit from a plane. Says this makes it harder to judge the company's claims because there aren't very many scientific publications that even mention this idea, and many aren't even talking about it at all. Maybe there's a reason for it. So they don't have the public going, what are you thinking you're going to do? Bayer has declined to comment on its research program, and so did Syngenta. Wow, you would think. Which Syngenta paid in 2012 $523 million to acquire a company called DevGen, a European biotech company with which it had worked on RNA insecticides. So all the evil are working on this technology. One project I did learn about is led by Nitzan Paldi, an Israeli entrepreneur who has been a co-founder in B-Logix. Now, who would have thought the Israelis were involved in trying to prevent colony collapse disorder, which then was purchased by Monsanto. Oh, but wait, didn't we find out that there was all kinds of incentive? Financial, government, U.S. government, and group money incentive falling from the sky for Israeli scientists and U.S. scientists to work together. Yes, we did. So this Nitzan Paldi, his current startup is called Forest Innovations, F-O-R-R-E-S-T. And they are investigating a solution to citrus greening disease, a blight that is destroying Florida's citrus industry. And it is also present in Brazil. Wasn't Brazil where they released the GMO mosquitoes as well? I believe so. And Key West is where they were talking about doing it. They just released some crazy mosquito in California last week or the week before as well. Anyway, back to this citrus greening disease. caused by bacteria spread by an invasive insect called the Asian citrus psyllid. It leaves oranges hard and discolored with the juice, the flavor of jet fuel. Last year, 22% of oranges in Florida suddenly fell off the trees. Palladi isn't willing to disclose exactly how he's applying the RNA, but he did say that he's hoping to block genes involved in the tree's reaction to the bacteria. It's their immune response to the infection that causes the greening symptoms. And if this treatment works, Politi believes, an RNA intervention, is that what they're going to call it? Intervention? To make it sound like it's good for you? An RNA intervention could sail right past the regulators. Isn't that what they're hoping for? It's going to be like treating you with a vaccine. They're going to treat plants and people with RNAi. Because it's healthy for you, and we can fix anything, they say. With growers desperate, and remember I told you, they always prey upon desperation, and the prospect of no more Florida orange juice, the public may be open-minded as well. Quote, we are potentially riding in on the horse and saving the day, he says. That's exactly how they do it. They want you to get on board because everything is dying. And now we have harnessed biology to be able to fix it all. Don't worry about what it might do to you 20 years down the line or what to your offspring, how it passes down through genetic lines. Nah, we don't need to do any type of long-term research for that. Back to the story. At Monsanto, the effort to develop an RNA spray to kill potato beetles has already overtaken the weed idea. And it could reach market by 2020, says Jeremy Williams, a Monsanto geneticist who directs the insect program. The company has settled on a gene target and has begun efforts to make the spray rainproof so it grips the plant leaf and doesn't wash away for at least a week. One reason the potato beetle is an interesting target for RNA sprays is that it's famous for becoming resistant to conventional pesticides. Since 1952, it developed a resistance to more than 60 of them, starting with DDT, but RNA interference is a means of attacking that Williams does not think will be easy to overcome. No, because you're attacking it at the root level of biology. This is just so beyond evil. If the beetle does evolve a resistance to an RNA molecule, he said, geneticists could easily launch a new assault. Just slide the sequence over by a few letters or target several genes at once. Don't think that this is not going to be used as a tool against us at some point. Yeah, they're spinning this as the savior of all humanity. It's going to save our food. It's going to cure you of cancer. But remember, there is ultimate evil that comes along with this technology. They are able to manipulate biological life like a marionette and take it out easily. You know, they had something, like I was reading about how some of this works in this quote-unquote insecticide. Basically, it gets into the insect and it just turns off proteins that are required for life. And once the protein's turned off, oops, the bug dies. I think they're doing something very similar to this in the Oxitec mosquitoes. They just turn off proteins that are necessary for life. And hey, life ends very shortly thereafter. Back to the story. Monsanto has also been interested in the problem facing orange growers. It collaborated with Wayne Hunter, a spiky-haired entomologist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's research laboratory in Fort Pierce on Florida's Atlantic coast, where grapefruit and orange orchards are affected by citrus greening disease. And with the assistance from Monsanto. So we have the U.S. Department of Agriculture working with the assistance from Monsanto. Hunter has been trying to kill the Sphylid insect with RNA. He toured me through a plot of 100 orange trees, explaining that he had drenched their roots. He had drenched their roots with RNA, or he had injected it into their trunks. Hunter's most interesting result is that orange trees seem to soak up double-stranded RNA and hold onto it. He applied a relatively huge dose to each tree, about 200 milligrams, and finds traces of their molecules still in their canopies 3 months later. Well, again, what do you think is going to happen with humans? I would really, really, really love to hear Dr. Huber's take on this technology. And as a matter of fact, at one point we had looked up his contact information at the university. I think I'm going to drop him this story and see maybe, and maybe even Jeffrey Smith from the Scientists for the Institute of Ethical Technology, I think they're called, and see if maybe they can do another interview based upon this stuff, because this is crazy. This is absolutely insane. The fact that they got this technology out of biologics, that's where they first started tinkering with this, looking at colony collapse disorder. This is just so insidious. In Hunter's lab, Sphylids were feeding on cuttings from the trees resting in cups spiked with the double-stranded RNA, and Hunter was testing specific sequences that match crucial genes in the insect. One which coded for arginine kinase interferes with the bug's ability to make energy. Oh, so let's just turn that one off. But before picking a target, scientists can sift through online archives of DNA data. And just like I said, and just like the DARPA lady said, once all of our DNA, and I mean all DNA of biological life, insect, human, and plant is all databased, she'll be able to take traits from each and every plant and animal and make life with the push of a button on demand. But they'll also be able to identify different proteins that they want to switch off for a desired result. Back to the story. Before picking a target, scientists can sift through online archives for $29.99 a month of DNA data to avoid matches with genes of friendly insects like honeybees. And it takes an exact match of about 20 consecutive genetic letters for RNA interference to work. The resulting double-stranded RNA molecules, which usually is about 200 letters long, are then fed to other species, including bees, aphids, and whiteflies, as a practical test for quote-unquote off-target effects. Monsanto has found that its sequences, which they call triggers, usually don't affect any but the most closely related species or bugs in the same genus. The differences are all genetic, says Hunter. The genes of insects are not identical, and if it doesn't match, then it doesn't kill. Well, phew! In contrast, conventional insecticides wipe out helpful insects along with bad ones. So they got to make sure they put that in there. So RNA must be good, right? Because it doesn't kill everybody, just the targeted populations. To stave off the greening disease, growers in Florida have been applying such chemicals as often as every 2 weeks. One called, now this is a hard one, imidacloprid, imidacloprid, is restricted in Europe for its suspected link to bee colony collapse. Quote, we've just got to get away from the use of hardcore pesticides, says David Hall, leader of the subtropical insect research unit that Hunter works in. And so far, it looks as though RNA treatments would be best would be at best an adjunct in the orange groves, not a silver bullet. RNA doesn't knock out bugs instantly, as a chemical neurotoxin does. And in Hunter's lab, insects only start dying after 4 days, and some live as long as 2 weeks. So yes, plausible deniability, people. They can live for up to 2 weeks while slowly starving as their biochemical processes within their body shut down. How wonderful a death that would be. It is a biopesticide, he says, so it takes longer. Perhaps partly for that reason, the field study of 100 trees supported by Monsanto yielded ambiguous results. The trees remain covered with psyllids, but they might have been flown in. They might have flown in from elsewhere. Hunter is planning to try again in a large enclosed greenhouse where he can apply RNA to every tree, mimicking what would happen if growers used an area-wide application. Meanwhile, growers are willing to try anything. Some grind up infected trees, and there's also a GM tree that is resistant to the blight thanks to an added gene from a spinach plant. But even if consumers accepted GM orange juice, those trees could not be planted fast enough to replace the millions of sick ones in Florida's groves. Hunter's RNA molecule probably won't arrive soon enough either. We are still probably about 10 years away, he says. Unless, of course, we had some sort of emergency. And that is a problem with this technology. Well, yes, because what? It takes too long to approve. Around here, there is an enormous amount of pressure to come up with a solution, he says. People on Monsanto's public relations staff told me that they hope to communicate better on RNA sprays than they have on GMOs. Visitors to the company's offices can pick up a handout titled 12 Myths About Monsanto, and number one is the rumor that it bars GMOs from its own cafeteria. Well, there you go, out of Monsanto's own mouth. They apparently let their staff eat it in their own cafeteria. But until now, The sprays have been too deep in the R&D pipeline to attract the attention of GMO opponents, except for who? Jules, yes. Jules dug it up and called those assholes out back 6+ months ago. I still haven't heard anyone talking about this RNAi stuff, but it's everywhere. It's all over now. It's in you. It's in me. It's in our plants. It's in insecticides. It's in the bugs. Yeah, they're trying it out everywhere. But plants genetically engineered to use RNA silencing have drawbacks as well. In 2012, good old Australia, the Safe Food Foundation in Australia alleged that experimental wheat developed by the Australian government could what? Oh, kill people. Yes. Now, remember when we first watched a video months and months back about nanotechnology and food. It came out of Australia. We'd never seen anything like that in the United States. But they had also pointed out that nanotech and food, just like GMOs, have been banned in Australia. Unlike here, we're friendly to all mad science gone mad in our food. People wonder why Western countries are so sick. Pay attention, people. We are a big, fat petri dish. But hey, in Australia, yes, the Safe Food Foundation Australia alleged that experimental wheat developed by the Australian government could kill people. They said that the RNA trigger designed to change the plant's starch content might match the gene for the human liver enzyme and interfere with it too. How interesting is that? The charge was fanciful. Of course it was. Mostly because RNA does not appear to make it past a person's saliva. Yes, it does not appear to make it past a person's saliva or stomach acids. But I'm going to call bullshit because they're already toying with those lipidoids and nanotech to get RNAi into the bloodstream for different treatments. But yes, the charge was fanciful, they said, mostly because RNA does not appear to make it past a person's saliva or stomach acid. But even so, says Weingard, and he was the CEO of that pre-series, the big question any skeptic will raise is, quote, if you are killing insects, what will this do to me, unquote. Well, gee, what a good question. Monsanto has been laying the groundwork for the inevitable safety debate. It sent staffers to grocery stores and farm stands to collect fruit and vegetables that appeared to be suffering from viral infections. And analyzing these, they found thousands of fragments of viral DNA, many of which closely matched human genes. Yet it is not known that anyone has been harmed by RNA in produce. And given this, quote, safety of consumption in the history, the company has concluded that mere matches between RNA triggers and human genes have, quote, little biological relevance. And that is how they are trying to sell this to the food regulatory agencies, that RNA is natural. And we've been eating it for thousands of years, so it won't affect us. I say absolute, utter bullshit. Last year, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency asked a panel of experts to help it decide how to regulate RNA insecticides, including sprays, as well as those incorporated into a plant's genes. And I actually have that document up. We're not going to have time today, but maybe we'll look at that tomorrow. In an 81-page letter to the agency, Monsanto lobbied against any special rules, and it said that RNA products should actually be spared safety tests. Spared safety tests, calling them irrelevant, including those designed to assess whether they were toxic to rodents or whether they could cause allergies, as well as an in-depth study as to what happens to the molecules in the environment. Can you even believe it? Only proteins cause allergies, said Monsanto. And when the company doused dirt with their RNA, it degraded and was undetectable after 48 hours. All right, guys. Well, there's still more of the story. We can finish this tomorrow. I only got about 5 seconds left of the show. I hope you have an awesome Tuesday. Mr. Kevin Blanch is up next. Make sure you stick around and all live radio tonight because it is Tuesday night. And there we go. All right, guys. Everyone have an awesome Tuesday.